Yo, BJ Gador with the Weekly BJ Podcast. I am on the road right now to a meeting in LA for our new apparel line, Sleeves Sold Separately. You can go to sleevessoldseparately.com to learn about when that is ready. But I wanted to jump in quick and answer one of the most commonly asked questions I get from you guys and gals, and that's about intermittent fasting, IF, or just fasting in general, as a viable approach to diet, nutrition, etc. And I've got a lot of experience with this, and I've got some key takeaways towards the end of the podcast that I think will really help you navigate the space. Again, what I try to do for you guys and gals is cut through the weeds, cut through the bullshit, and just give you clear takeaways with which you can kind of learn how to approach this, consider it, discard it, whatever, but at least you know about it, right? So I've got a lot of experience with fasting because of the fact my dad is actually Muslim, and I would do Ramadan with him, which is a month-long fast once a year, and it's a serious fast. Like, it's not only you can't eat, you can't drink water. If you throw up, you break the fast. It's a very serious fast. It's not like, I know some people say I've gave up, you know, this for this, or I stopped drinking soda as a fast. No, like, it's a true fast, and it's very, very difficult. I would exercise sometimes during those months, and I had a football season twice. Fell during the month of Ramadan, and it's challenging. I mean, the one thing that can happen is you can get some focus because, like, you're just so hungry and your mind can kind of just go on autopilot. Sometimes you actually find some energy from it from the standpoint that your body's empty, you're light, and you're clear, but it's challenging, especially when we're talking about not having water. You know, water is one of the most important things to get for performance, and dehydration is what will decrease performance and open up the risk of injury quickly. So it's not an optimum way to do it from a standpoint of, you know, health, performance, etc. But, you know, obviously it's a religious thing. So it was something that I thought was very challenging and helped a lot with discipline and, you know, seeing how mentally strong I was. And there's value to that outside of performance, right? If you can just get more mentally tough, and once you know, like, well, I'm not going to die if I don't eat for 3 hours or 6 hours or even a day, you know, There's a lot you can take away from that. But I then evolved into kind of finding ways to, you know, stay lean year round, still be able to build muscle, look the way I wanted to look, and kind of came upon intermittent fasting when it first kind of became a big thing about more than a decade ago. You know, there was some stuff that came out. I know one thing that was really popular was an ebook, which is so funny. We're talking about, I mean, you know, you date yourself when you say I had a really popular ebook. But it was about Brad Pylon, I believe his name was, and it was called Eat, Stop, Eat. And it was an approach to eating whereby you would only eat for an 8-hour window, and then you would then fast for 16 hours. You could drink water and tea and coffee, anything that was non-caloric. And that became like a big thing. And then now suddenly, a decade plus later, it's like a huge topic of interest along with things like keto. So again, you know, what's old is new, but, you know, there are other approaches that, you know, have been used, such as, like, one day a week you do a pure fast, or, you know, every quarter. I know some people, like, every quarter they'll not eat for 3 days and just drink water, and some people do, like, I think 3 to 7 days once a year. I mean, there's some really extreme protocols, and again, what some will say is that the longer you go in the fast, the greater the health benefits, and there's a lot of crazy claims. You know, so for what I'm trying to get to, I don't want to get into the weeds with that shit. You know, obviously, I think what all we know from the research really is that at the end of the day, from a, you know, fat loss standpoint, it's about energy balance and what works best for you. So you got to get in some sort of caloric deficit, and it's got to be something that's sustainable for you. Because if it's not sustainable, it's questionable. That's how I look at everything with diet and training. And I think that can guide you and making some really quality decisions and avoiding the pitfalls that many get into with regards to the dogma, the extremes, the absolute approaches. So those are kind of the main ways to do it. The one thing I would say to you is, having done them all, like when I've done like the longer fasts, it really leads to, right, the more extreme the protocol, the more extreme the response from your body. You got to understand, your body is a compensation machine. Like when, many times I would, you know, people, you'd think my dad still does, like, he fasts every year for Ramadan, and he thinks that, you know, I'm going to lose a bunch of weight, and he loses a little bit of weight, but, in a lot of cases too, like, you can, like, binge when you can finally eat, and then you're eating at really weird times, right? Like, you've got to, especially during the summer when it's really long days, you're eating sometimes at like 8 o'clock and you're eating a lot of food, and then you have to wake up before dawn at like 3 or 4, 4:30 and eat then, and it affects your sleep. Like, there's a lot of things that can happen with that. And you're trying to get enough calories for the day or to get full and not have to just constantly think about, you know, eating. Because what does happen is you want to sleep. And that's what happens in a lot of cases to a lot of these Muslim countries. The people will take naps in the afternoon because they just want to get through the day. It's hard, man. It's not easy. So the less extreme the approach, the better. Like, I've done some, like, super extreme protocols where I just had, you know, like amino acids and greens powders for like 2 or 3 straight days. And I mean, yeah, I got like shredded at that point because I was getting ready for something. But I mean, every 10 seconds I was thinking about food, and then there's this huge rebound effect, and not to mention mood swings. Your performance sucks. You don't want to move at all. Like, once you're done training, you don't want to do anything, including work. Like, because you don't even have the brain power to do basic work for your job or career or whatever else. So it's, you don't want to go that extreme with it. And so if any of those protocols, the 16-8 seems to be the most doable for people. And again, it's not something that's going to create huge swings for you unless you have like true issues with food. You know, if you're prone to binge eating, fasting can really open up the gate to just explosive binges and explosive diarrhea. They kind of go hand in hand. So just be careful with that. And I know several people, like, for example, my buddy Jeremy Scott, he's got a really popular podcast. He's a guy that has 1 or 2 meals a day, tends to skip breakfast and then eat later in the day. And, you know, for over a decade now, I have used what's called a modified protein fast. And it's not that I'm fasting protein. What I'll do is I'll start the day with 30 to 40 grams of complete protein, grass-fed whey or plant protein. In the past, I've also used like 5 to 10 grams of essential amino acids, which are the complete blend of all the amino acids you can only get from diet. So they include the 3 BCAAs and then everything else. And then some greens powder, athletic greens. I've got a link to that in the show notes for those interested. It's the best greens powder. I've used it for years. And it also doubles as a multivitamin, has so many benefits, digestive system, all that. But I don't want to get into all that. But that's a nice thing to pair with the protein. And basically what you're doing is you're giving your body everything it needs to build and repair muscle mass, but still allow it to tap into carbohydrate and fat for fuel, and particularly fat for fuel. That's what intermittent fasting really allows for, is that, you know, since you use fat at lower intensities, and if you're not supplying your body with fuel other than protein, it's going to be using more fat for fuel. And that's why initially, like, if you feel awful, like on a, like skipping a meal or something like that, your body starts to shut down. It's one of the signs that you don't have a lot of metabolic flexibility and your body isn't good at using fat for fuel, and that will affect your ability to maximize body composition and be lean. And ultimately, again, we talk about this concept of metabolic flexibility. It's that your body can use carbohydrate for higher intensity endeavors and then use either dietary fat or stored fat for lower intensity activities, and you want to be able to do both. So I found that, and I'll typically eat around midday, noon, 1, sometimes 2. It really depends. That's what I don't like about the windows of this, right? There were situations when I was doing, like, when I was all in a, like, 16-8 window. So I would stop eating at 8 p.m., and then I would not eat again until noon the next day. So if it was, like, 11:50 a.m., and we were going out to eat, or there was like something coming up, I'd be the idiot who would have to, I'd have to wait 10 minutes. Like, I just couldn't do it. I have to wait till it was exactly 12. I think that's where you have to kind of check yourself. Are you becoming too, you know, obsessive about this, and the stress about waiting, or like going out with someone? It's like, someone wants to set a lunch meeting for 11:30, and you're like, I can't do it today because I can't eat till noon. You know, these are type of things where I think it's like, okay, it's not necessary. That's like, it's not a good, healthy way to approach life. It's not a longevity approach, in my opinion, and it makes you look like a freak. So anytime you can avoid that, I think that's important, especially if you're involved in business and you have to deal with people on a regular basis. So that's the one thing I didn't like about it, but I have for over a decade now. So again, I said earlier, if it's not sustainable, it's questionable. I have sustainably just had pure protein, greens powder in the morning, and then waited later in the day to eat. And usually what I'll do is I'll have my protein and greens powder. I will do my start the day activities, hit up a workout, walk the dogs. I'll have a little bit of protein again right after the workout, and then I'll have my first meal of the day with, you know, protein, produce, maybe some additional carbohydrate based on the day or what I'm trying to do, and that's where I'll go from there. And I find that to be an incredibly effective plan. It simplifies my morning routine. I have a lot of energy. It's really allowed my body to be very good at metabolizing fat while also still being able to incorporate carbohydrate at the right times. So that's the one thing. Like, I've gone super low carb and intermittent fasting. Again, incredibly effective for fat loss, but not great for muscle gain. And sets you up for that kind of metabolic inflexibility where your body doesn't, becomes almost carb resistant in a way, and that's not good too. And eventually you're gonna have to incorporate carbohydrate back into your life. If you are interested in more about low carb and keto stuff, I have an episode on that as well, breaking that down into full detail. But this is just intermittent fasting, or fasting in general, we're talking about today. So I've tried all these situations, and you know, the big takeaways for you are this. Like, one of the things someone asked me, are you know, what do you think about intermittent fasting? I ask, well, do you get 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night? And if the answer is no, I will tell you as simply as possible, I think it's pointless to pursue that, because the less sleep you get, the more hours you're awake, the more you're going to want or need to eat. You're also going to be in a situation where a lack of sleep makes you move less and eat more. It raises stress levels, and you're going to be ravenous. Like, I tried this when I used to run boot camps and have a gym, and when I was waking up at 4:30 in the morning and only getting like 6 hours of sleep or less a night. And it was really hard. Like, I was cranky and starving. And I guess miserable would be an appropriate word. So it's very difficult to even follow it without a lack of sleep. But I think what people overlook too is it's called breakfast for a reason, right? Breakfast is the first meal of the day. It doesn't matter when you have it. It doesn't have to be at, you know, 8 to 10 a.m., even though that's when people tend to, after 10, they can shut down breakfast. Even though, I will say, I'm happy to see it. It's a big trend. All day breakfast is kind of, it's happening everywhere now, which is fantastic. I'm a huge fan of Brenner, breakfast, dinner, all that good stuff. I love eggs any time of day. But, you know, it's a fast. When you're sleeping, it's a fast. So, and it's also easy to fast when you sleep. So you can get 80% of the benefits of fasting by just getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. Quality sleep, deep sleep. You get a great growth hormone pulse, which is great for anti-aging, recovery, fat loss, muscle gain. And I mean, just that point, I think people overlook so much, because again, people that struggle with sleep, they'll just say, okay, I'll just, let me find a supplement, let me find a fad diet that can help me fix this. And when in reality, you can't fight your body. Your body always wins, and especially when it comes to sleep. So it's pointless unless you get enough sleep. And then if you do get enough sleep and you can extend that kind of fast in a way, whether it be a true fast without nothing coming in, or, you know, having a little bit of protein just to optimize your protein intake, and we'll touch more on that in a second, then, you know, I think that can be even better. And still, like, you can get 80 to 90% of the benefits of intermittent fasting with that protocol, and how much extra benefit you can get from, like, nothing coming in or doing it longer, you know, again, the jury is still out on that. And again, I don't think it's a sustainable way of life for a lot of people. The other true benefit of fasting is that it can really help you learn the difference between true hunger and wanting to eat. Because I want to eat all the time. My wife and I talk about this constantly. Sometimes she'll go upstairs just because the fridge is on the bottom floor, and she knows she's not going to go to the fridge. She's have to go downstairs. And that's enough work for, I think, a lot of people that they won't end up eating, you know. So but you know, like, you start to understand, okay, yeah, I could eat right now, but I'm not starving. I can go another 3 hours, where a lot of people are so kind of indoctrinated with eating every 2 to 3 hours that they think, you know, life as they know will end if they can't eat within a certain time frame. And you do learn also how to, I think, you know, you definitely get fuller faster when you use these protocols. Because again, your body's getting used to being lighter and empty, and it doesn't feel good to get stuffed again, right? So I think there's definite value that way, whether your stomach shrinks or not. I don't want to get into that, but it definitely, I mean, you'll notice that where you'll be starving, but you'll be like eating half of what you think you could, and you're already getting full. So, but that's an important thing. I think a lot of people don't know the difference, or they feel they absolutely have to. They've been told from the snacking industry or the bodybuilder approach to dieting that if you don't eat every 2-3 hours, you're going to lose your muscle mass. Your life is going to fall apart. You could die. And in reality, you could go a full day without eating. You can go a week without eating, really. I mean, it's possible. It would be absolute misery, but people do it. I think there was one study with obese clients where they, again, don't quote me on this, but I think they went almost a full year. But anyway, your body can go a long time without eating. It's just how miserable do you want to be? So, and again, we don't want to go for those extremes. I think intermittent fasting is excellent for fat loss because it's a simple way to get into a caloric deficit and get your body to use more fat for fuel, right? So if you were someone who was already eating like 5 to 6 meals a day and you just went down to like 2 or 3, I mean, you're cutting your meals in half. Maybe they'll probably be a little larger than they would be otherwise. But you'll still, you know, if you're going to limit your eating window, it's going to be harder to get too many calories in, and probably an easier way to at least cut the number of calories you're currently eating, if not get into a deficit of energy balance where you're expending more calories than you're consuming. Again, that's the key to driving weight loss, fat loss, etc. So there's a lot of value there. Now, the reason I don't think it's great for muscle gain is because, let's say you're using an 8-hour window. We know through the latest protein research that you want to have 3 to 4 hours between protein intake to maximize its utilization. If you're getting too much protein too soon, your body will not utilize it in the way that you want. It needs this ability to kind of go through a spike of protein and then a valley, and then you kind of keep going through that, and by spacing it out properly, you properly activate muscle protein synthesis, which is your body's anabolic response to ingesting protein. So you want to space it out about 3 to 4 hours. There are some exceptions to the rule, I think, in terms of, you know, obviously liquid protein or faster absorbing protein can give you, you know, can be digested in 1 or 2 hours before having something else again. But you also don't want to just be having liquid protein as your only protein source and just being someone who's on a shake diet. That's crazy. I've done stuff like that before too, and not a sustainable way of life. So again, from a standpoint of if you want to optimize muscle gain, it's trying to get as many protein spikes from food as possible. You ideally want about in a minimum of 3, ideally 4 of those a day, as kind of a sustainable approach. And it's very difficult to get that in an 8-hour window. And so again, from a pure like muscle gain standpoint, someone that's has trouble building muscle or is a hard gainer, not a great approach. Someone who's more endomorph and has an easier time building muscle or has been training a long time and has a more advanced body type that they've built for themselves that they own. You know, guys like Jeremy Scott and myself have been doing this for a long time. We built a lot of muscle mass. So now our bodies even now will respond to protocols in a different way than they would 10 years ago because we're different. We have changed the way our body reacts through consistent training, nutrition, intervention. So again, that's why you have to be careful too in modeling people that you admire, look up to, or inspire you, because again, their bodies are different. The diet that they're using today isn't necessarily the diet they used that got them there. And some of the results you're getting now are, there's kind of exponential returns to the consistent approach and making it a lifestyle where down the road you get smarter with your training, you know exactly what your body responds to, and you can start to cheat the system in a way where you can continue to, you know, burn fat and build muscle simultaneously, albeit slower for each than it would be if you just focus on one at a time. It's called body recomposition. My preferred approach, where you can kind of be the same weight, but slowly you replace body fat with muscle. Not that the muscle's replacing the fat, but you're losing fat and gaining muscle and ended up being the same weight. And that, for me, is my approach now because I have to for my job or what I like to do. I personally like to be lean year-round. I don't like, even if it means I won't gain as much muscle in the short term, I feel more comfortable. I don't like having to go through times where I'm fat and slow and lethargic, etc., the bulking shit, and then having to cut and lose a lot of strength and be miserable. I like more of that, you know, flatlined approach where, not necessarily flatline, but it's a steady, slow upward trajectory of that graph versus, you know, huge spike, huge fall. That again, the extremes are what, through experience, I'm just telling you, you're not going to like them, and it's not sustainable, and you ultimately, if you can't do it, you're not, even if the results are great in the short term, they're not great in the long term. So it isn't great from a protein intake and utilization standpoint. And again, but you can kind of hack that by getting the protein in the morning, around your workouts, etc., and then make it more of a modified fast. And again, just if you're not ingesting a substantial fat or carbohydrate, your body is going to have to use those sources for fuel and find them, whether it's the stored carbohydrate in your muscles or liver or your stored body fat. So that's, again, how you can kind of cheat the system, hack the system, and make it work. So I definitely, like, big takeaway, I would consider a modified protein fast where you take about 30 to 40 grams of complete protein or 5 to 10 grams of essential amino acids immediately upon waking, ideally with greens powder for, you know, just getting in those essential micronutrients. But again, you can make it work for you. And then you can push that first meal off about 2 to 4 hours or till midday. Get you about 80 to 90% of the benefits of fasting, especially combining that with a full night's sleep without all the drawbacks. And it can definitely help you improve metabolic flexibility, so your body uses both fat and carbohydrates for fuel effectively, and it's excellent for body recomposition, which I talked about earlier. Again, being able to stay around the same weight. Like, I try to stay around 225, 230, and I'm just slowly over time trying to continue to get leaner and build muscle, but it's something I own because my body never goes to extremes. And again, you have to be comfortable with that approach. It's like a slow investment with a long-term yield. Not very sexy, right? Because people want to get the 16-week or the 12-week or the 30-day results. But, you know, for me, it's all about being able to run the next race and make it a lifestyle. So I hope this helps. You know, it's very easy to get caught up in the bullshit of a lot of this stuff, and we're looking for the magic bullet or the latest, coolest thing that the latest celebs are doing and what they're talking about in the magazines. And again, this shit is not new. This shit has been around a long time. And having, you know, a decade plus experience of the latest approach I've been talking about, but also I've done extreme fasts, like extreme, you know, both the Ramadan, also like days without food coming in. It's yes, you can do it. It's possible. But it's not an optimum approach for performance or health, in my opinion. And ultimately, you got to make your own opinion, form your own opinion through trial and error. But you can give it a shot. And the one thing you can consider, too, is anytime you make a change, it's going to take a couple weeks to respond. You might initially feel like crap by cutting out that first meal and just having protein only. And if you're not used to training on an empty stomach, you might feel like shit. But your body will adjust to it. And what you will find is, I personally do find, everybody's different, but personally and from a lot of people that I've worked with, they end up finding more energy, more focus during their workouts when they feel light and empty, and then they end up being able to more properly metabolize fat for fuel, and that's a great path. Again, it is all about calories at the end, but if your body is not effectively metabolizing fat, it's going to be hard to lose body fat. So you want to achieve both, be able to use fat for fuel and find, you know, a caloric deficit. And again, intermittent fasting approaches can be effective for that. Not optimal for muscle gain, but I think the best of both worlds can be found with that modified protein fast I talked about. Hope this helps, guys and gals. If you enjoyed this, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast. A 5-star rating and review is much appreciated. That's how we get out there to more good people like you trying to build this up. And the more it builds up, the more I'll put into it. So I'd appreciate that. And you can get a free 3-day trial to my monthly fat loss programs. You can do it home or take to the gym at thedailybj.com. And if you're looking for more information on nutrition recovery supplements and follow my exact training plan, you can go to gorillacorngains.com and join my online coaching group, which we open up every quarter. So all that stuff is in the show notes. Hope you enjoyed this. And now you know a little bit more about intermittent fasting. It's not, you know, some crazy thing you have to figure out. It's a viable option for some, and even if you don't do it, at least you know more about it. All right, love you guys. Peace.